Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast, sponsored by WebSpy. It's August 2, 2010, and this is episode 253. Still busy getting things sorted out after my move. Today, I'm going to just take a relatively easy episode and answer three photography-related questions from a listener. Before that, I'd like to thank our sponsors, WebSpy, the internet monitoring, analysis, and reporting specialists. If you use Twitter, to show your support, go to my blog at blog.martinbaileyphotography.com and click on the text link underneath the WebSpy tile to the right. That will automatically tweet the message, thanks to at WebSpy for sponsoring the at Martin Bailey Photography podcast, or you can just type that in yourself if you prefer. To find out more about WebSpy and their products, go to webspy.com/MBP and use the discount code MBPWSY for a 10% discount on anything that you buy. Okay, so today's questions came from Paul Posey in Louisville, Kentucky, which is coincidentally the home of our friends over at Outdoor Photo Gear. Thanks very much for your questions, Paul, and it looks like you sent them via the MBP Podcast Companion iPhone app, so thanks very much for picking that up too. Remember that you can get your copy of the app by searching for MBP in iTunes Store and filtering under Apps, and there's also a link to the application in the menu on the blog. So first up, Paul asks, what tripod do you use in most of your work and why? So for a number of years now, I've only used Jitso tripods, the carbon fiber series, because I find them to be, they provide support for heavy equipment and long lenses, despite them being relatively light because of the carbon fiber construction. They aren't cheap though, and I do think that there may well be some good alternatives on the market now too, but let's look at what I use first. I actually have three Jitso tripods. One is a very tall, old 3-series tripod before the 6X range was introduced. 6X design basically stops the leg segments from turning when you loosen the locking nut to adjust the height. I also have a very large 5-series Jitso that I use for video, but my main tripod is the GT3540L. But I don't want anyone to get hung up on the numbers here, because this may well not be the optimal tripod for you. Also, Jitso revs the last digit in the model names when they release an updated version of each tripod, so the GT3540L is no longer available. So instead of giving you model numbers, I'm going to discuss some of the options that you need to consider when buying a tripod. What I also suggest is that you take a look at the Jitso products configurator that can be found on the top page at jitso.com. Unfortunately, at the moment, it seems to be broken, so I wasn't able to reference the configurator in preparation for this podcast. Hopefully, it'll be back up before you try to use it yourself, though. Anyway, here are the things to bear in mind when you start to select options for your tripod. For your main everyday use tripod, select something that will get your viewfinder of your camera at least to eye level when the tripod is fully extended, but without using the center column. The sizes are available on the website, but you'll need to look at the height of your tripod head and the distance from the bottom of your camera to the viewfinder, but generally you can just add around 20 centimeters to the height of the tripod and that will get you close. The objective here is to stop you from having to stoop when you're framing your shots. There really is nothing worse than bending over to compose your photographs because you didn't want to pay the cost for a tripod large enough to enable you to avoid doing this. You'll soon find yourself not using the tripod at all, and that means that the entire price of the tripod was a waste. I say that you need the height to be at least to your eye level, because I actually like to try to get around a foot or so above my eye level for a couple of reasons. The first one being that if you are shooting something, you know, shooting up at something, maybe up into a tree, it makes it much more comfortable if you can increase the tripod height to a point that you can look up into the camera. You can get around this to a degree with an angle finder, and live view also helps, but still, getting the camera up high really helps here. Also, in deep snow, unless you put shoes on your tripod legs, which are available, the tripod will sink into the snow and you end up having to stoop again. The same can happen in soft sand to a degree, but not quite as much as deep snow. So again though, having a foot or so leeway can help you to sort of maintain the ability to compose your shots at eye level. I should point out that although I talk about getting the viewfinder to eye level, I do not propose that you shoot everything from eye level. Getting down low and shooting from other perspectives is important, but you don't want to have to do this from necessity because your tripod's too short. I always go for a carbon fiber tripod option, but the Basalt series is also very good as a second choice if the price of the carbon fiber range is a factor for you. It's slightly heavier, I believe, but still provides very rigid support for your gear, which leads us to another factor to bear in mind, which is the total weight of the equipment that you'll be mounting on the tripod. You'll need to weigh or calculate the weight of the heaviest equipment that you intend to use. If you need the tripod to support, say, a pro body with a 500mm lens, for example, you'll need to make sure that the tripod you select is rated for the total weight of these two pieces of gear, and then some, so that you can add a strobe or other equipment if necessary. I've used heavy equipment on tripods that were not rated that high, and it gets shaky and the results is blurry images. If you want your tripod to collapse down small enough to be able to carry onto a plane, you'll probably want to go for a four segment leg version of the tripod as opposed to three. Even then, if length is an issue, I suggest that you check with the airline that you use most often to see what the maximum length of your baggage can be and ensure that the collapsed tripod is inside this range. I actually have to take the ball head off of my tripod to get it on as a carry-on because it's very close to the limit. You'll also want to keep the minimum shooting height in mind. If you'd like to get down nice and low, for example, you'll want the legs to open up really wide and have the ability to remove the center column, and then you can mount your camera pretty much at ground level. Also, being able to mount the camera upside down underneath the tripod can be a good way to get really low for a low perspective or for macro shots of very small flowers, etc. There are a number of things such as off-center ball head mounting, and there's the leveling center columns as well that you might want to consider if you shoot in rough terrain where the ground can sometimes be very uneven. There are a multitude of other things to keep in mind, and I haven't covered them all here, so I really do suggest that you take a look at the Jitso website and see what is the best match for your needs. I did mention that there are other tripods, other options, and to my mind, the only other two types of tripod that I would consider at the moment are the New Range from Really Right Stuff and Enduro. Really Right Stuff create incredibly well-engineered equipment, and I've heard that their tripods live up to their incredibly high standards too. The problem is, if it's a problem for you, that they are three-section design legs right now, and they're too long to carry on an aircraft, at least here in Japan. I do ship my longer tripods, but I like to be able to carry my main tripod on with me, so that kind of rules these out for me at the moment. Enduro have a pretty impressive range out there already, to say that they haven't been in this market very long, and they're certainly worth looking into as well. Some of their line is good for carry-on, and the price is probably more attractive than some of the Jitso range. I haven't actually used Enduro products yet myself though, so I can't vouch for them personally. So moving on to Paul's second question, and that was, what walk-around lens do you use and why? This is a tough one because I rarely just walk around with just one lens. If I can realistically only take one lens with me and I don't have a specific objective that would require, say, a certain longer focal length or a certain focal length that I need to cover, I will generally reach for the 24-70mm f2.8L lens or a 50mm lens. I love prime lenses and I in fact only own three zoom lenses, but zoom lenses offer a lot of versatility and the quality of modern zoom lenses is so good that you really don't have to worry about the trade-off in image quality anymore. Generally though, if I'm looking to keep my options open and I don't have a specific subject in mind, I'll pack two more lenses, even if I'm just going on a walkabout. Of course, if I'm going on a workshop or, you know, I'm going out shooting, I'm doing wildlife, I'll take as much as I can carry. But, you know, keeping this theme of just going for a walkabout in mind, I'll usually carry at least two more lenses. On the wide end, I'll take either a 16-35mm f2.8 version 2L lens or the 14mm f2.8 lens. Again, the 16-35 is a very versatile lens, but the 14mm is a great lens, and that extra 2mm does seem to make a difference when you really need to go wide. I generally also take a 70-200mm f2.8 lens with me as well. In practice, I actually use the 70-200 much more than the mid-range 24-70mm, but that is because I don't really do much street photography where I'm just sort of walking around with one or two lenses looking for opportunities. My photography is generally targeted with a specific location and subject or range of subjects in mind. I usually take much more kit out with me, but on occasion I will take limited gear with me if I don't so much have a certain type of photography or photograph in mind. Or if I intend to do a spot of sort of out of character street photography. Of course, the 50mm focal length is something that many associate with street photography, and I have owned a 50mm f1.4 lens for some 10 years now. And although these are pretty cheap, I even paid about half of the cost of a new lens to get mine renovated last year and had the autofocus fixed as that had broken. I also re-bought the legendary 50mm f1.2L lens that I originally bought and then sent back straight away on confirming that the focus mechanism is unstable when shooting close to the minimum focus distance. It's just too good a lens though to leave out of my kit bag, and so I bought another one with the money that I got for my old 70-200mm lens earlier this year. As I'm sure you've heard, many people think of it as a bit of a creative exercise to venture out with just a 50mm lens, and I support that theory. There's a certain something about the 50mm focal length, and I find myself shooting differently and looking for different subject matter when I'm out with a 50mm. Take this image that we have in the podcast at the moment, for example. It's an old bike outside of an old shop. When I shot this, I was on a day out shopping with my wife. We were going to be in a part of town that we don't visit often, so my curiosity was piqued. This is actually a good example of when I might take just a camera with one lens and sometimes make that the 50mm. Another reason people like the 50mm is because it has a perspective similar to the human eye, which makes images shot with a 50mm lens very natural. Of course, the 50mm lens is also considered a very nice focal length for somewhat intimate portraits, like this one of a hotel doorman that I photographed in India. Maybe not my best portrait, but I like the gentle expression on this gentleman's face, so I thought I'd include this one too. 85mm, of course, is often considered a good portrait lens, and if I was going out to only shoot portraits, I might take just that lens, as I once did during a walk in a market in India. But again, I'm just adding more options here in response to a question about which one lens I would like to take out with me as my walkabout lens. I guess this kind of proves the point that it really does depend on my objectives. Given the choice, I would also have at least two or three other lenses with me for just a walkabout, that is. But when I do limit myself to one, it's usually either the 50mm or the 20-70mm f2.8. Outside of my own current lineup, I should also mention that the 24-105 f4L lens is another great walkabout lens. I actually sold my 24-105 to buy the 24-70 because I wanted the wider aperture. But if that isn't a problem for you, the 24-105 is a very versatile and incredibly sharp lens that I can certainly recommend. I got a shot of my niece on her wedding day with my old 24-105mm that I still find is one of my favourite candid portrait shots. Anyway, hopefully you get the picture on the single walkabout lens. It certainly is not an easy choice, and hopefully you'll not be restricted to own just one lens. Those are my thoughts though. So finally, Paul's third question is, have you used the Canon 100-400mm lens? Oh yes, I should say though that I have mixed feelings about the Canon 100-400mm lens. I saw from a follow-up email from Paul though that he is shooting a film camera, probably in addition to a crop factor digital camera. In that case, you know, by all means, go for it if you're considering this lens. Even if you are shooting digital, you may not have to rule this lens out. And just let me explain the reasons for this. The 100-400mm can be hit and miss on image quality. It's generally a little bit soft if you're using higher resolution cameras like the Canon EOS 5D Mark II at 21 megapixels. These cameras basically out-resolve the lens. This means that if you view images shot with the 100-400mm at 100%, you'll see that the image is not all that sharp. Of course though, just because you create images at higher resolution doesn't mean that the lens is any less sharp than it was, say, when with a 12 megapixel camera. But you can see the quality is lacking with a higher resolution body. I personally want my images to be as sharp as they possibly can be, and for me, if I find that the resolution of my camera is out-resolving any particular lens, I start to avoid using that lens. Foolish? Maybe, but I can't help it. I spend a lot of time and effort making images, and I want them to be the best that they can be. I also want to know that I can print my images out very large and still be happy with the sharpness. And I give myself more options by shooting the sharpest possible base images. If, however, you are happy to know that you can easily make up to, say, a 13 by 19 inch print that is probably going to look as good from a 100-400mm, whether they're shot on a 21 megapixel camera or, say, a 12 megapixel camera, and you don't foresee wanting to print really large at any point, then the versatility of the 100-400mm is second to none. I have to admit that I really do miss being able to go from 100 to 400mm with one air-pumping swoosh of that lens. One other thing to note about the 100-400 is, and this is where it gets a bit hit and miss, is that sharpness drops off even more as you get close to the 400mm focal length. I have some 200 images on my website that I shot with the old 100 to 400, and the ones that I shot around the middle of the focal range are by far sharper than the ones shot at 400mm. This image of a shoebill stork, for example, is tack sharp at 330mm. I'll put a link in the show notes to view all of the images with this that I shot with this lens so you can take a look. Also note that for anyone that is wondering what sort of, you know, what gear I'm using and example images from each piece of gear, Note that if you go to my profile on my blog, there are links to all of my camera bodies and lenses that I've ever used, not just my current ones, all beneath my profile on the blog. And if you click on the links, you'll see a list of all of the images that were made using that gear. I'll put a link to that page in the show notes too. In summary, if you really want versatility over quality at the long end, and you aren't worried about really large images, then the 100 to 400 millimeter lens is an amazing piece of glass, well worth the money. Before springing for this lens though, do note that there's been a lot of rumors that Canon could be bringing out a version 2 of this lens, and those rumors have been around for a while now, so you know, you never know, but it would certainly make sense as they are going through their range of lenses, updating them all with improved resolution to match the resolving power of their modern DSLRs. The 100 to 400 millimeter is a workhorse lens for many wildlife and sports photographers, so it really wouldn't surprise me at all to see an update of this lens in a relatively near future. So I hope that answers your questions to a degree, Paul, and that the answers have been useful for the other listeners. Thanks very much for the questions, and remember, everybody, that I'm always open to questions, which you can mail me via the contact us form at martinbaileyphotography.com, or you can just blast me an email off to questions@martinbaileyphotography.com, or better still, I've registered the domain mbp.ac, which you can remember as MBP Academy, and now you can also mail questions to questions@mbp.ac, which should be easier on the typing fingers. Or of course, as it looks as though Paul did, there's a contact button right there in the MBP podcast companion app, so if you pick up the app you can mail me directly from your iPhone as well. Remember that voting is now on for our July photography assignment on the theme of symmetry. Do stop by the mbpgalleries.com website and cast your votes by the end of August 7. There are some great shots in the gallery as usual. Thanks for listening today, and thanks again to our sponsors WebSpy for sponsoring the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Remember that you can find me on Flickr and Facebook, as well as on Twitter, and of course my blog and photography forum. All links are at the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so drop by and check that out. I'll be back next week with another episode. In the meantime, you just have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.
This is Dave Warner, and I'm the host of the LensFlare35.com podcast. Each week I bring you interviews with some of the top photographers using digital SLR cameras. They share some of their coolest tips and tricks, techniques, and news about what they're up to. So please take a moment to visit the website or subscribe to LensFlare 35 on iTunes.
The Martin Bailey Photography Podcast is a proud member of the Photocast Network. Find this and other great photography podcasts at photocastnetwork.com.